Welcome to Talking Facts, what you need to know about family, food, finance, and fitness. This nationally recognized, award-winning podcast is hosted by the University of Kentucky Family and Consumer Sciences Extension Program. Our educators share research knowledge with individuals, families, and communities to improve quality of life.
Hello and welcome to Talking Facts, what you need to know about family, food, finance, and fitness. I am your host, Mindy McCulley, Extension Specialist for Instructional Support with Family and Consumer Sciences Extension at the University of Kentucky. We are housed in the Martin Gatton College of Agriculture, Food, and Environment.
According to the American Cancer Society, for the first time ever, there will be more than 2 million new cancer diagnoses this year. Colorectal cancer is the number one cancer in men and number two cancer in women. And while cancer risk does increase with age, it appears the cancer patients are getting younger. In Kentucky, cancer does continue to be the second leading cause of death. My guest today, Dr. Amy Kostelic, Extension Specialist for Adult Development and Aging, along with her colleagues, Dr. Heather Norman Bergdoff, Dr. Carrie Ashurst, and Dr. Natalie Jones, has developed a program called Kick Kentucky Cancer, which deals with this very specific topic. So we are going to dive right in and discuss caring for those you love. Welcome, Amy.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Mindy, for having me. And as you shared, each year, cancer affects millions of people in Kentucky and, across the world as a patient, as a caregiver, as a family member, as a friend. So, I think it's important to remember that it's not, if it hasn't touched you directly, it probably has indirectly in some way, probably will by the end of your lifetime. And so because of that, we did create a program under the leadership of Dr. Heather Norman Bergdoff, Kick Kentucky Cancer. The premise behind that was it's a multi-lesson program where we talk about just some of the definitions of cancer and some of the basic cancer lingo. We've got a lesson on cancer and nutrition, what you should do to help make yourself healthier. We've got a lesson on mental health and cancer. We also have a lesson on etiquette. What do you say? And we've even recorded a podcast on that one as well. What do you say? What do you do around someone who's living with cancer? And then we've got this topic as well, caregiving for cancer. That's a big job and sometimes can be a little bit different. Different types of caregiving require different, needs and education and such. And so we hoped that this lesson, that this podcast could give a little insight onto the day in the life of a cancer caregiver.
If my loved one has just been diagnosed with cancer, what do I do now?
I think that the simple answer and the first answer that would come to my mind is that as a cancer caregiver, now that you're entering that role, is to really learn about the diagnosis and to really understand the disease process. And that's going to help you get an idea of what lies ahead. And it gives an idea for the patient as well, of course, but I'm talking specifically for you, as a caregiver. What are we in for? What's coming down the road? So the American Cancer Society has a lot of resources available. They're online. We'll post some. And then locally too, we're blessed in the state of Kentucky to have the Marquee Cancer Center out of the University of Kentucky. And even a variety of the area agencies on aging, health departments have different cancer-related programs, materials, support resources, and such. So there's a lot of information out there that easy at our fingertips, and you can always contact our extension offices as well in the counties to get more information, whether it's on our specific programs like the Kick Kentucky Cancer or, supplemental programs just on nutrition, financing, housing, how to be safe, those kinds of things that will relate to caregiving issues.
We often find that people are intimidated about asking questions of their doctor. So what are some of the things that we recommend that people should ask their doctor when they've been diagnosed with cancer?
Great question. So again, according to the American Cancer Society, some of the first questions that you and the person living with cancer should ask your doctors and or the cancer team, you know, there may be a variety of people that you're working with, but it's okay just to ask some of the simple questions and don't assume that you should know these answers. I mean, this is new territory for probably a lot of people. So to ask the basics is okay, and people shouldn't feel silly or dumb or like they should know the answer. And even if you think you know the answer, ask it anyway. You can always learn from someone's response. And so again, the American Cancer Society suggests questions like, what kind of cancer is this? Where is it? Has it spread? Where did it start? What are my treatment options? And what do you recommend? What is the goal of treatment? How long will treatment last? What will it be like? Where will it be done? They recommend asking questions like, what sorts of side effects can I expect? How will treatment affect my everyday activities of daily living? And it's okay too to ask, what's the likely long-term outcome? And so again, those are just a few questions to get people started, but those are good questions to get people started as well.
And some of those questions might have answers that you don't really want to hear, but it's really better to have the information than not. And I know good communication is so important. So just having all of the tools that you have available to you is going to make this process maybe not necessarily easier, but at least it will give you everything in your toolbox that you can deal with.
Yeah. And I think that's a good way to look at it. How do you build that toolbox? And one of those ways is through educating yourself and knowing what to expect. And so sometimes that it may be things you don't want to hear, but does that allow you to put a different tool into that box? It probably will. And so I think if you kind of think about it that way, I've got to build that toolbox so that I'm prepared. And it may be too that the person living with the cancer isn't maybe ready to do that or talk about that.
Right.
You may know as a caregiver, I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to have to carry that weight and build those tools so that we as a team will be ready for when that time comes.
Well, and I do think that you're right, that there is a team. The medical care team it consists of several different doctors or pharmacists or that sort of thing. But then also the caregiving team might consist of, you know, a spouse, a parent, a child. And so having everybody have the same toolbox is going to be beneficial.
Yeah. And to go off that kind of analogy and just to further reinforce the importance of a team, sure, you might have your care team of, you know, healthcare providers, but I think it's also a good idea in any caregiving setting to have a caregiving team of support, like you said, with your, you know, partners, friends, family, the church community, the neighborhood, whoever you think fits on that team. Because even as the primary cancer caregiver, you can't do it alone. It's a really big job and it's a lot of weight on your shoulders. And so to be the best that you can be at caregiving to help that person you care about, it's really important that you have a team that's all inclusive and that the person living with cancer is a team member as well. So that so that their voice matters, so that their wishes are known and that sort of thing. So again, the cancer team in general should always include the patient, all the healthcare providers or professionals, the family, the friends, but you as the primary caregiver may be the one who's kind of coordinating all of that. You know, so what is it that you can expect to do as that primary caregiver? Again, I keep referencing the American Cancer Society, but again, it's because they've got so many great references.
Right.
And we want you to look on their pages as well, because they're certainly the experts. But again, they're going to say as a primary caregiver, like Mindy and I already talked about, you've got to educate yourself, but you also have to educate and inform the rest of the team because they may not know and you can't make assumptions as to what they know or don't know. So you've got to learn about the diagnosis again, the treatment options, the side effects, and just the proper support materials that the team can pitch in with. You've got to be able to find healthcare providers that you trust. And again, that might be you and the person living with cancer working together. It may be getting second opinions, you know, those sorts of things. You've got to know how to contact those healthcare providers and to have an opportunity for communication with them. So it may be even looking at things like putting in powers of attorney for health.
Sure.
So that you have that ability to talk and communicate with people, especially if there are times that the person living with cancer can't do that for himself or herself. You're going to maybe coordinate patient care, and that may be from things like keeping records of their medical history, their medications, their test exams, results, you know, making sure different providers are communicating with other providers, looking at new symptoms and kind of monitoring those things so that you're able to tell a doctor. I always say to people, even if you're healthy and you go to a doctor, it's good to bring someone with you, because a second set of ears can hear things differently than you can. They can remember things maybe better or differently than you can, or they may even think to ask questions that you may not think to ask. And I say that on a good day, on a healthy day, on a regular checkup day. So think about that. If you've been taxed with an illness, a treatment, you're on medications, it can be really overwhelming to be at an appointment by yourself and then to try to remember all these things. And you may miss a question, or you may not hear something quite right. And then you go home and everyone's asking you all these questions, and you think, I don't remember all the answers to that, or I didn't think to ask that. So I do think it's a good role for that primary caregiver to try to go to those appointments and help coordinate some of that conversation as well, and really kind of taking some of the burden off the person living with cancer. So you might oversee paperwork just so that they don't have to deal with that. You know, what they need to deal with is their fight. Let you be the one who's going to deal with all the other stuff, the communication, the paperwork, the appointments, how to get someone to and from an appointment, coordinating schedules. So really the primary caregiver has a big job for sure. You know, the primary caregiver is often, like you alluded to, it's a spouse, it's a partner, it's a parent, an adult child, family member, close friend. But what they are, regardless of your title, what you are is a lifeline. And so I think you really have to look at that, whether you've been trained. Most of us have not been trained in caregiving. We've taken, you know, a variety of classes over reading, writing, and arithmetic, but we don't typically take a class on caregiving. So we don't really know, you know, what we're in for. However, all of a sudden you're in this role where you're providing ongoing care, support, encouragement. You might be someone's line to survival. And so what you as a lifeline looks like is going to be really different too. And so it could be that you're grocery shopping, you're preparing meals, you're doing housekeeping and laundry, you're paying bills, you're caring for kids, administering medications. You might be transferring someone to and from wheelchairs and beds and helping someone in a bathroom. I mean, it's amazing what we learn on the job. But again, when you start to build that team can help you with some of those different lifeline sort of jobs that may come up in cancer caregiving.
I mean, cancer caregiving is tough. It's rough, you know. I guess there are sunny days because you're spending time with a loved one. And so there is a little bit of sunshine and rainbow, but it's not going to be all sunshine and rainbow. It's also a way that you can show love that you never, ever knew that you would be able to do. It is an opportunity to love in a way that you never know you can, maybe.
Yeah. And there's some emotion with that. I know Mindy's lost her mom. I've lost my dad. And the same thing. We were able to provide care for him in a way that I never dreamed I would provide care for my father. But it is that sometimes I don't like when we talk about caregiving in general. Sometimes we skip over the sunshine days, like Mindy just said. So you might have you're changing a depend or a bedpan day, and those are bad days. But the fact is, if you're in a loving relationship or it's a loving opportunity, that there's a lot of silver lining in that too, that you can be the person providing that level of care and that level of support. In your own way, you can sort of cherish those moments because it is out of love. It is out of concern. And you think, I wouldn't want someone else to do this because this is my person and I love this person. So again, I think Mindy's right. We don't talk a lot about the sunshiny days. And it's not to say that the burden isn't there. It's hard. It is hard. Mm-hmm. I remember with my own dad, he started having some night terrors. And my mom, who never left his side, one night came down to me and she was beat. She was exhausted. She hadn't slept. And she had stayed by his side and she felt so defeated that she couldn't do it. And I remember I hugged her and I said, I'm so glad you came down and woke me up because I'll sit by his side right now and hold his hand and listen to him. And I was grateful for that. Mm-hmm. You know, and that those opportunities. So it's not to say that it doesn't come with burden. It does. No matter how much love is in your heart for somebody, it is hard at times, and you don't sleep, and there's stress, and there's anxiety involved, and there's anticipated loss potentially involved. It is certainly not an easy role. But again, I think that reinforces the importance of a team, reinforces the decision that it's okay to take a break. And sometimes we're going to have to force that break on people.
And it's so important to choose our words carefully, to think before we speak, and to be empathetic. And I think that that is so important, not only with the person who is living with cancer, but also with our other caregivers, because we don't have any idea how they are processing. Every person processes differently. And so we need to really think about our own feelings and our own emotions and be respectful that everyone else is doing the same thing. And so thinking about how they're doing it and how we're doing it, how we're all living through this together, and just giving grace, I guess, all around, whether it's to the person who's living with cancer or to our fellow caregivers. Amy, thank you for joining us today. I'm grateful for the time that we have spent together, because while my caregiving role was a long, long time ago, and it's been a few years since you had that caregiving role too, I know that the experiences are still fresh in our minds, aren't they?
Very much so, yeah. And I would not do it over any different. I'm so grateful for that opportunity to be with my dad and to have held his hand. And I know
I know. The only thing I would like to change is for it not to have happened, right?
Right.
we would like to still have them here with us, but be that as it may, we can't have that. So if you are just joining us, you have tuned into Talking Facts, and we are available on all major podcast providers.
Thank you for listening to Talking Facts. We deliver programs focusing on nutrition, health, resource management, family development, and civic engagement. If you enjoyed today's podcast, have a question or a show topic idea, leave a like and a comment on Facebook at UKFCSEXT or send us an email at UKFCSEXT@uky.edu. Visit us online at fcs.uky.edu to learn more about the University of Kentucky Family and Consumer Sciences Extension Program, or contact your local extension agent for Family and Consumer Sciences. We build strong families. We build Kentucky. It starts with us.